Hi, this is Austin Hill. Thanks for listening to this podcast from the Austin Hill in the Morning program. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com, and your support of them make them possible. Thank you.
Back to Austin Hill in the Morning. Questions or comments for the show? You can leave them on our show page at myfaithradio.com.
Good morning. It's now 35 minutes past the hour. It's the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Great to have you with us as we seek to be informative and challenging, hopeful and helpful here at the start of your day. Question, what do you think of when you hear the words settled science? Settled science. That means that a fact has been determined to be a fact, and you shall not ask any further questions, let alone disagree with it. No further inquiry is necessary, right? It's settled science. That's how a lot of people characterize various theories about global warming and the idea that the climatic pattern changes that we may or may not observe in our world are brought about by humans. It's all the people's fault, right? Well, the idea of settled science, just the idea itself, saying that something is settled and no further inquiry should be allowed, that's unscientific from the get-go. But why should it matter to you and to me whether something is settled or not in the scientific realm? And why should it matter that one of the world's most renowned physicists, a gentleman named Dr. Dyson, Freeman Dyson is his name, he is saying this settled science thing is really, really destructive. Joining us to clear the air on this, no pun intended, it's our great friend Dr. Cal Beisner from the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. His nonprofit group seeks to speak a biblical ethic, a biblical Christian worldview to the issue of proper care of the earth. He joins us on our guest line now. Dr. Beisner, good morning. Welcome, sir.
Good morning, Austin. How are you?
I am I'm feeling unsettled about these claims of settled science. And then in comes this gentleman that you wrote about recently, Dr. Dyson, who says, wow, this is dangerous to think that this is all settled science. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually, there's one sort of an interesting, funny, ironic thing associated with this, too. And that is that although Freeman Dyson is recognized all over the world as one of the greatest physicists of our time, and he teaches at Princeton, has taught at Princeton for many, many years. He's in his 90s now. Dyson never earned a doctorate. He never even earned a master's. His highest degree was a bachelor's of science in physics, or rather, actually, in mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a great example of how people can learn things outside of the formal academic track, so to speak, and become truly great experts in their fields. And that helps really to put a crack in the whole claim of an awful lot of the climate alarmists that, well, you're not a climate scientist, how can you be talking about this? Well, as a matter of fact, lots of the best contributions in various fields of science have been made by people who didn't have the credentials but who did have the learning. And Freeman Dyson is an example of exactly that. Well, what Dyson has pointed out, basically, is that the whole attitude of the movement that says, hey, look, global warming is dangerous, it's real, human activity is causing it, and we need to spend trillions of dollars to stop it, that whole movement really arose through a process that is the exact opposite of real science. He calls it tribalism. Mm-hmm. And likens it to politics, where you know, you have a winning side and a losing side, and your aim is to win for your side. The aim is not to find truth. The aim is to win for your side. And that, he says, was written right into the whole way of doing the global warming controversy, starting out in 1978 when the U.S. Department of Energy drew up what it called a comprehensive plan for carbon dioxide effects research and assessment. And that set an agenda for the official discussions of carbon dioxide ever since that time. And Dyson, when that was done, actually wrote a memorandum protesting against the plan. And now he was an important part of the American federal government scientific research at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He said, the direct effects of carbon dioxide increase on plant growth and interspecific competition receive little attention. That is, more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere makes plants grow more, and that also enables the various different species to compete better. He says the plan is drawn up as if climate change were the only serious effect of carbon dioxide on human activities. Well, the result of that is the government has already committed itself to a particular conclusion, and then everything is about winning the battle for that perspective rather than an objective search for scientific truth.
You know, I appreciate you bringing this up. I note here, as I hear you talk about these things, Dr. Beisner, I think of the pastor of my own church. I'm very fortunate, my wife and son and I, to belong to a church where the pastor has, quite frankly, very similar credentials to you. And our pastor has a similar interest in connecting our Christian worldview and our faith and the scriptures to science and other things of the world. And he said it this way when, in a sermon. I was really kind of caught off guard. He said, he kind of just touched on this issue that you're getting into very briefly. He said, I know this will step on toes, but I've got news for you. Science itself has been corrupted with government and politics and political money. Most of the scientific evidence that we read that says, you know, we must tax people higher and put more government controls on people's lives to save us from global warming, that money itself comes from governments. And it sounds like that's what you're alluding to here, Dr. Beisner.
Yeah, it is. And it's what Dyson is alluding to as well. You know, and actually, it's what President Eisenhower warned of very, very seriously. In his farewell address in 1961, just before he left office, he warned of two things, and most people remember the first one. He warned about the military-industrial complex, the huge problems that arise when you come into a situation where you have to have a military defense that is ready instantaneously, anywhere, anytime, because attacks can be launched quickly and without great warning. And that means you have to have a defense industry that's always functioning, and that means then that you're going to have that industry constantly lobbying the government for funding, and so you get this kind of a cozy, mutually beneficial relationship between the industry and the government where they protect each other. And the taxpayers then, of course, kind of get roasted. Well, that's what most people remember, but Eisenhower also warned of the problem of a scientific technological complex, where he said, you know, what's also happening is that scientific research is becoming so expensive that people have the perception that only government has the funds necessary to fund it. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not true, of course, because that money would be available elsewhere if government didn't take it, but that's the way people think. And once you get this notion underway that government is the primary funder of scientific research, then the scientific research that gets funded is the research that feeds the government's agenda.
Yes.
And he warned that was a very dangerous thing, and we needed to guard against it. And unfortunately, I don't think we've done a very good job.
All right. Listen, we need to take a quick break. We'll continue with Dr. Cal Beisner. He is a theologian, and he heads up a nonprofit group called the Cornwall Alliance for the for the study of stewardship of creation. And we'll get to why this global warming mania, why it really does matter. You may want to sit on the sidelines and say, oh, how dare you, Dr. Beisner, or you, Austin Hill, how dare any of us question these things? The real experts have told us what has happened here. We do need to question this. And if we sit silently and passively, it could cost us dearly. We'll find out what that cost might be when we continue. I'm Austin Hill. It's now 45 past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. Good morning. It's now 46 minutes past the hour from the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill. Great to have you with us, our great friend, Dr. Cal Beisner, theologian And the man who heads out the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, he connects Christian faith and theology to the sciences. He's with us on our guest line talking about why it really does matter, this debate over global warming and whether or not the so-called settled science that says it's all human caused and we need to have more government controls over our lives to save the earth, why it's true, why it's false, why does any of this matter? Dr. Beisner, you go out, as I know, as often as you can and speak to church groups and pastors groups and such on these issues. Why does it matter in the church here in the United States of America what science, so-called scientific inquiry, is telling us about global warming?
Well, it really matters because what we do in response to this information has an enormous impact on other people's lives. And we at the Cornwall Alliance have tried to express that very briefly in a petition called Forget Climate Change, Energy Empowers the Poor. And before the break, you and I were talking about Freeman Dyson, one of the great scientists of the whole last 50 years and more, who has signed on to an open letter that we prepared to the American people and our elected representatives about climate change. And Dyson makes the point, I think, very, very simply in a recent interview that he did for the UK Register. He said, look, the fact is that coal's carbon dioxide's contribution to climate change is extremely complicated and pretty small by comparison with natural forces. But its contribution to people's need for energy is huge. And then he said this, China and India rely on coal to keep growing. So they'll clearly be burning coal in huge amounts. They need that to get rich. Whatever the rest of the world agrees to, China and India, which, by the way, contain about a third of the human population, will continue to burn coal. So the discussion is quite pointless in terms of the whole idea that we're going to ban the use of coal to make energy. Then he says, at the same time, coal is very unpleasant stuff, and there are problems with coal, quite apart from climate. Then he says, I remember in England, when we burned coal, everything was filthy. It was really bad, and that's the way it is now in China. But you can clean that up, as we did in England. In other words, coal can be burned cleanly, as it is in all high-income industrialized societies, so long as you don't consider carbon dioxide to be dirty, a pollutant. And in fact, it isn't dirty, it isn't a pollutant, it's essential for life, and with more of it in the air, you get more plant growth, which is good for everything. The problem is that the calls to turn away from fossil fuels, including coal, toward wind and solar to power the world's energy systems are essentially a call to turn from much less expensive and much more reliable sources to much more expensive and much less reliable sources, and that means condemning the world's poor to continued poverty for more generations to come, and all the suffering that comes from that, disease and premature death that invariably come with severe poverty. So our policy responses to the claims about global warming have huge consequences for other people's lives, and that's why the church, which ought always to care about the poor and to want to protect them from oppression, that's why we should care about this issue.
Now, you know very well, Dr. Beisner, that, and I think this is safe to say, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's safe to say most pastors in America today are not trained in science. They're not trained in these public policy issues. This quickly becomes a public policy issue, especially given what the United Nations is purporting to do and will attempt to do, apparently, later this month. But most pastors in most Christian churches in America probably don't even think too much about this stuff, important as it is. And so many of us in the pews, we don't get a connection of these kinds of issues to our Christian faith or vice versa. What is the thoughtful layperson supposed to do to try to make a positive and, I guess, Christ-like difference in the world on this issue?
Yeah. Well, you know, partly we do need to become at least reasonably well-educated on these things, and that's a huge part of the Cornwall Alliance's work. This is why we publish papers on a fairly regular basis. We've done about six major papers now over the past decade, done by outstanding scientists and economists as well as theologians and philosophers, that bring together, tie together all of the scientific and economic and philosophical, theological, ethical threads on this. And so those are all available at cornwallalliance.org. And frankly, by reading even the last of those, called A Call to Truth, Prudence, and Protection of the Poor 2014, a pastor could, or a layperson, could get pretty well informed in just, maybe an hour and a half or two of reading. Now, we also have shorter things. I mentioned that we have an open letter to the American people and their elected representatives. That's at our website, cornwallalliance.org, and that can be read in a period of maybe 10, 15 minutes. And then finally, we also have a petition, Forget Climate Change, Energy Empowers the Poor, and boy, you can read that in less than a minute. And it summarizes the gist. It is this. People desperately need abundant, affordable, reliable energy to rise out of poverty. The risks of poverty are much greater than the risks of climate change, so therefore we need to see them overcoming poverty. And to do that, they need access to abundant, affordable, reliable energy from fossil fuels. So nobody should be signing us on to any agreement in Paris or here in the United States to try to reduce CO2 emissions by reducing our use of fossil fuels.
Are you concerned that
petition, by the way, is the petition, by the way, is at cornwallalliance.org/energyempowersthepoor.
Yeah, I'll put a link to this on our @MorningAustin Twitter account, so listeners and those who follow us on Twitter can check this out. Are you concerned that something dramatic will happen with the United Nations that gets imposed on us here in the United States when they meet again, what, I think November 30th, shortly after Thanksgiving? What do you expect?
Well, what I expect is that it's probably going to go quite similarly to the last roughly dozen of these meetings. There will be a feverish attempt to put together an agreement toward the very end, which is December 10. They'll be saying, oh, it's all fallen apart, and then there will be some effort in the very last minutes, perhaps going till way past midnight from December 10, and they'll come out with some sort of an agreement. It probably will not have an awful lot of substance to it. It probably won't be legally enforceable, but it will wind up most likely committing the United States to giving a bunch of money to third world countries as what is termed reparation for climate damage already done by our past use of energy. That basically will mean the money goes into the hands of the thugs who rule those countries. It winds up in their Swiss bank accounts, and when they get chased out of government, they'll have a cushy retirement with millions or billions of dollars available. So that's the kind of thing that's most likely to come out. It's still potential that a much more toothy agreement can come out that will require a reduction in CO2 emissions, and that will harm developed countries. Developing countries like India, China, Brazil, they have made it clear they're not going to sign on to any such thing because they know that lifting their people out of poverty is priority number one.
He's Dr. Cal Beisner. He heads up the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, and we'll post a link of his organization and its materials on our @MorningAustin Twitter account. Hope you're following our show there. Dr. Beisner, thanks for what you do. This is difficult work, and I'm glad you're there doing it. We look forward to talking again very, very soon.
Thank you, Austin. Take care, and God bless.
And to you as well. It's 56 past the hour from the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill, and thanks for listening to this highlight from Austin Hill in the Morning. More on this topic is available at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes it possible. Thank you.